Let's get this party started.
Welcome to the I Squint Podcast. Hey everybody, welcome to this, the I Squint Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Lang. This is the 12th episode of the I Squint Podcast, and it's actually a pretty special one for me because it's the post-show podcast for LDI 2010. I was joined by a couple of good friends and some industry professionals while at LDI 2010 in Las Vegas. We actually ditched the trade show the last hour and sat down and talked about what we saw at the trade show. Forgive me, I'm stumbling only because I'm still really, really tired, and this is a couple days past LDI. I think everybody is in the same boat as me. There is just so many things to see, so many things to do, and I'm just talking at the trade show. At night is a totally different story. There were parties, there were events, there was all kinds of stuff, and I'm like everybody else, I'm still trying to recover. Just because it was so tiring, but so much fun at the same time. So let's get into it. Joining me on this, the 12th episode of the I Squint Podcast, Mr. Michael Eddy from Eddy Marketing and Consulting. You might remember him from episode 11, the pre-show podcast for LDI 2010. Pretty well-respected individual, Mr. Richard Cadena, editor of PLSN Magazine, joins us. David Schraffenberger, General Manager of Production Advantage. And finally, Jacob Coakley, Editor of Stage Directions. All these guys had great things to talk about. They each saw things that I didn't see, somebody else didn't see. And it was great to get everybody's information together in one place and get some different opinions about what was on the show floor, what they thought, some of the new technologies at LEDI, basically. But there were still some other pretty cool things. So let's get right into it. Here it is, our talk with Mr. Michael Eddy, Richard Cadena, David Schraffenberger, Jacob Coakley, and, of course, myself.
All right, so we're here at the last hour of the LDI 2010 here in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm joined by some pretty freaking awesome people. You know, they're geniuses in our industry, I think. You probably know them all from either me talking or seeing their names, you know, in just a couple other places. First, Michael Eddy, thanks for coming back.
Thank you.
Richard Cadena, editor of PLSN, thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm a huge fan of iSquint.
It is iSquint, thank you, not iSquirt. Thank you. David Schraffenberger from Production Advantage, right?
That's right.
I got it right, great.
That's right.
Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. It's nice to, all the way from Vermont.
Are your arms tired?
They are, but not as sore as my feet.
Right.
It's a pleasure to represent the retailers here in this forum. Thank you for the invitation.
No, definitely. More the merrier. And last but not least, editor of Stage Directions, Jacob Coakley.
Coakley.
Oh, that's right, Coakley.
Thanks for inviting me. I will say, honestly, in this company of gentlemen, I will actually say least, because I am too humble to be talking to all these great guys.
I don't think that's true at all. You know, one of the things that I love about the community that I try and get to is not only professionals, but end users, students, people that may not know a lot about the lighting industry. You know, so you bring in a great perspective, I think. So let's start off. Who wants to go first? Who saw the latest and greatest thing that's going to revolutionize the industry here?
I'll go.
Okay, what you see?
Well, the elephant in the room is LEDs, obviously.
No, you got to get it right. It's LEDI now.
LEDI.
LEDI.
LEDI. But the new wrinkle is that you're seeing a lot of hard edge profile LED fixtures, and the first one that I saw that really blew me away was the Robert Juliet Aladdin. Of course, they showed a prototype last year at LDI, but now they're shipping it. And every time I see it, I'm just amazed that they can take an LED array and put it in a profile spot fixture and get a focusable beam and drop in a gobo and project a beautiful picture that's just, it's mind-blowing that we're at that stage right now.
Yeah.
The shuttering is
beautiful. You get a nice sharp cut. And the optics, I mean, Juliet's always known for its great optics, and I think that's the one thing that's come through in this. So, yeah, I think they've come the furthest in this case with how bright. It needs to be brighter yet, because it's still like brighter than Source 4, but, you know.
It's half the output, right?
It's about, I think it's about half the output of like a 26 degree.
But if you take a look at what the LEDs have done, and what the really, really useful LED fixtures are from a theatrical perspective. Mm-hmm. The Robert Juliet is right in front. But the other one is the Verilite. And both of those organizations paid specific attention to the optics. It's not a question of just putting a bunch of little LEDs in a fixture.
Right.
You've got to pay attention to the optics, or it makes it very difficult to replicate the effect you're looking for in a theatrical setting.
What was the name on that Verilite fixture?
Yeah.
This is the VLX.
Right. Yeah.
And that light engine in there, because it's a 120-watt light engine, in the VLX, the moving light version, they joined 7 of them, I believe, is what they have gained.
Right.
But now, because of Philips and Celicon, they've taken that and done one into the PL1, so you've got an architectural fixture, so you've got one of those light engines, and then they have the PL3, which looks like a Fresnel, and they have three gained together. Now, there's a 5 version, which I thought was Celicon, but then I saw later that it was labeled a Verilite that had 5, and the thing is really bright. Now, I haven't seen a shutter because they don't have any barn doors there, because I was like, oh, we forgot to bring the barn doors, but it looks great, and it has a lot of light output.
I saw the barn doors at Plaza last month. They do exist, and they work.
But the VLX, I saw it in prototype last Las Vegas. It was a prototype.
That was the
best first no shadow or single shadow, and fully mixed the color. So they've really, I think, that light engine, I agree. And they've handled the heat dissipation correctly, because unlike what people are telling you, LEDs do produce heat.
If they're done correctly, and that really has to be dealt with. Otherwise, the color goes funny
heat management,
way early.
I opened one fixture 2 years ago. I opened it up, and the heat sink was not connected to the LED. It dies.
Wow.
It was like, so we have a fake heat sink? I'm like, why bother? It's not planned obsolescence. It's not, you know.
Right. It's just poor design. Yeah.
And can I just inject something here? Somebody pointed out that the Aladdin is half the brightness of a Source 4 fixture. Well, that was at 5 o'clock yesterday. At noon today, it was the LEDs are even brighter than they were yesterday. Okay, that's a little bit exaggerated, but you get the point. LEDs are still getting brighter.
And Robert Juliet clearly has the leading profile.
Right.
Well,
go ahead, Jacob.
Well, what I was going to say on that was one of the things that they've got that, and I don't know that they do this. I don't think that they do, but the Prism does is they do the constant monitoring. They've got the camera in there with their reveal, the Prism reveal, and what's the other name of the
studio.
Reveal studio. So they've got the camera there, so they can constantly mix the light to the specifications you want, and then adjust it as the LEDs age and the color changes on that.
I think that's going to be the direction, because like Gecko does this for the film guys. Right now they're doing it for white, but they do have a color version as well that they do for the entertainment side. But that's kind of lagging behind the white, because they were started as for image capture, so they're doing it for film. But I think that having the feedback loop in there to get that constant feedback and monitoring over the life of that LED, it's going to cut down on the binning. I think it's going to bring the cost down potentially, because right now that tight binning is driving that cost up so high. So if you can monitor and keep that LED the same color throughout, that'll be pretty nice, I think. So the other interesting LED I saw was, did you guys see the Osram? They've got what they're using in the Mole Richardson soft light, which is a little tiny soft light, which I think is kind of... It's like, oh, it's a doll soft light. But they are using all blue LEDs, but with a phosphor in there. So they're getting a broader spectrum, and they're all blue LEDs, so they're all going to age at the same rate. So it's not like you have RGB, and you're going to have LEDs age out at different rates. So it's just a solid. And I saw a daylight and a tungsten, and it looks really nice and something. So they've started doing it in these little panels that you can put the dyes in, and the soft light is probably only 12 inches by 6 right now. So Mole's doing it for the film business, but I think that, you know, Osram's obviously going to push this towards a broader market and things and stuff. So
That's the trend. They're taking blue LEDs and using phosphor coatings to get white light, and they're pushing the efficacies of the luminaires very, very of the sources very, very high. I mean, it's not unusual now to see 120 lumens per watt with white LEDs, and it's still growing. That's why I say, at 5 o'clock yesterday, and they're getting brighter today. They really are on a very, very steep ramp. Increasing brightness.
We need a Moore's Law for LEDs. We need some name in there.
It's called Haight's Law.
Haight's Law, okay.
It's called Haight's Law, H-I- H-A-I-T-Z.
That's why we bow to you.
This is why we're in a table of geniuses.
No, I just read. That's all.
Well, we talked about the Leaden, but what about the Neva from Strong?
Neva.
The Neva, thank you. The Neva from Strong.
Yeah.
What's your guys?
It's an interesting fixture, and the thing that is interesting about it is that it looks like a Source 4, except it's an LED source.
It's a Source 4 or 5. It's a Source 5. Source 5.
Source 5. There
source
you go.
Source 4 is trademark, remember? Source 5.
And it's a knockoff. And somebody asked me if you could put a real Source 4 lens tube into the knockoff Source 4 body, and I'm like, I don't think so. That'd be a bad mashup. But yeah. It's a little dim. You know, I heard some people said that they could use it in certain applications if light levels are low.
Sure.
What they're calling it, when I talked to them about that, and when they think that it was interesting, they're not calling it a profile, they're just calling it, it's a pattern projector.
Okay.
That's what they're pronouncing. They're not trumpeting it that it's going to be a profile fixture. I think they're aware of its limitations on that, but it's still pretty impressive for having a body like that, inching towards having a fully functional LED profile.
I mean, I think that there's a lot of people that see LEDs are going to do the entire system. I still think it's going to be a hybrid system. It's going to be a mix of different things. We're going to have tungsten, because there's still things that tungsten does better, and you still need it for color quality and things. And I think designers are going to rebel if there's just only LEDs in the system and some things. I mean, I'd like to see more energy efficient. Bring some maybe more efficient lamps in for Source 4s. A lot of people that are using 375s.
You say that about the Source 4. Does everybody doesn't remember that the Source 4 is pretty energy efficient already. It's producing the same lumen output as a 1,000-watt lamp at 575. That's
right. It's 45% more efficient, absolutely. But I think there's still range to go. Yeah, because there's a lot of places where you're putting in a 575-watt lamp and dimming it down.
Sure.
You know, television and things. And then you get people that, we have to have the 750 because it's going to be, they're still that mindset of, I need a 1K.
Sure.
Well, we'll put the 750 in. Well, yes, but I'm dimming it down. It's a 25%. It's like, and then I put color in to bring the color strip. So.
Right. Well, what I thought was interesting about the Neva, I cannot get that name right. I'm sorry. The price point on that thing, $875 retail price out the door.
Well, that's the other half of Haight's Law, is that as the brightness goes up, the price is coming down as well, and the two are intersecting. And we're at a real interesting inflection point in those two curves, because now it's suddenly these things are bright, and they're affordable at the same time. That's why we're seeing this explosion in all these LED fixtures.
Sure. It was a disruptive technology for so long, and people are finally figuring out how to use it properly,
And it had been over-marketed or mismarketed for a long time. They were much over-promising.
Yeah.
I think we're getting over that now. I think people are coming out with realistic life expectancies, realistic heat. I think that there's more, let's stop the BS and start, really giving us accurate measurements.
Yeah, I think somebody at the Parnelli said it best when they said LEDs are the future and they always will be. But that's not really true anymore.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you first.
Well, I was going to say, you sat through the Celador demo. I saw you in there. I think it'd be unfair to talk about LEDs without talking about at least some kind of light like that has, that really addresses not only brightness, but also color quality, and as well as color wash as well. What was your impression of that?
Well, first, you're talking about which one? The Celador Pearl? The new white picture?
Yes, the new Pearl.
Okay.
Yeah, well, there was the Pearl and also the...
They've got the Pearl, they've got the Vivid line,
right,
they've got their Fire and Ice, they've got
Luster,
thank you, and then they've got the Pearl. And
Pearl's
Novella,
new,
forgive me for if I'm forgetting one.
Yeah, Pearl's a new guy on the block.
Pearl's the new one.
Pretty impressive, actually.
Paletta, Luster, Vivid are the seven color.
Yeah.
Fire and Ice is the red and the blue,
right.
And then the Pearl is the brand new all white.
Yeah.
Okay. So what you think?
I loved it. It gets a really good color, and it's almost an amber. Like, you look at the fixture, and it looks like there's almost an amber LED in there, but they say it's just white LEDs, and then they've got the two different color temperatures added. I'm going to get the wrong, but they've got the tungsten temperature, and then you've got the
32
and the 5600 roundabout in there. And in the hands of a good programmer, it's you can tweak it and just make it look... It looked beautiful. It looked really great. And
the seven colors have always impressed me. I'm kind of surprised nobody else is kind of getting a little closer, because RGBA and RGBW are just not quite there yet.
Yeah, sure.
They're better than RGB, which light years have. But yeah, the seven colors, the colors you can get out of that are amazing. And if you do need a program and you do need to kind of know it a little bit better, it helps the DTCs there with color picker and things like that, right, to make it a little easier to do that.
But this is not even with the color. I mean, I agree, obviously, when you're getting the, when you're adding the peaks of the seven colors, of course you're going to get more. But this was just on the pearl.
Oh, I know, the white.
The white, they had it demonstrated on a chair where they had draped several different Hawaiian shirts. And as you brought up the colors and as you worked through it, you could see the different colors pop. And even on the white, when you just brought it up, all the colors pop. And LED white light isn't the full,
right,
tongues, isn't the full incandescent spectrum. But no, to see them bring up all the colors on that was really impressive. And I asked them, I'm like, this is just white. You're not putting other color LEDs in there on the array. Like, no, this is just straight white. And I don't know how they did that. It's like, is it in the phosphor coating? How are you looking? Like, yeah, there's a phosphor coating, but that was about as much as they would say.
they could tell you, but Novella would have to kill you.
Yes.
There'd be secrets.
Yes.
Well, speaking of seven color, you know, we with the Celador lineup, I just ran over to the Altman, and they brought out an R40-ish strip light LED fixture, red, green, blue, and...
amber blue.
Was there amber in the... red, green, blue, amber, but they also included white in there. So you have eight circuits or eight R40 modules, whatever you want to call them, that are LEDs. And six of them are the RGBA, and four of them are the white, or two of them, three of them.
Right. You can specify the mix. It can be all color, or you can mix in whites.
Well, it dawned on me that they're bringing in the white, because Walt Dowling gave me a great little video that I'm going to put up later, but... It reminded me of the Celador, where he wanted to punch something or soften color, bring up the white. So it's interesting to me that,
right,
I don't want to say that they're copying Celador at all, because they're not, but they've recognized that you need to be able to pop with a little bit of white.
Yeah, I didn't find the color mixing as good as that. It's not as good as what they have in the little SpectraSite.
SpectraSite.
And now they've got an outdoor version of that. That J reflector helps kind of that. I didn't, the PAR 30, PAR 40. It was quite. It needed a little bit of distance to mix it a little bit more and things there,
sure,
and something. So, but they did have a LED black light. I don't know if you guys saw the black light that they had,
which
has got three rods that you can focus individually, and then you can turn it because the yoke is the same size. You can rotate it around inside the yoke and have a horizontal or vertical kind of rotation. But just little black light LEDs in there, and they had across the booth were black light paintings, and you could actually get that to pop. So, it was, you know, not a lot of output there, but kind of a nice black light control. So.
Anybody else get a chance to see this?
I missed it.
Oh, sweet! You got to see something that others didn't. So what else was out there? What else did you guys see that just sticks
in
your head?
Want to move off the LEDs?
Yeah, can we do that, please?
It's 20 more of the
podcast. We've got to give
my it. My favorite moment was at the new products breakfast when the folks from Interactive Technologies talked about the Figment.
Yeah.
Showed a picture of a guy sitting on the plane. At 36,000 feet, the new Figment has Wi-Fi. So if your flight's delayed and you're the electrician and you're sitting on the flight at 36,000 feet with an aircraft with Wi-Fi on it, you can start your dimmer check right there. I thought that was the coolest thing.
All right, you got to explain. Apparently, I didn't get to see this one.
Wowzers.
Figment?
The Figment. It's a little nice little diagnostic tool, you know. Every top line gaffer electrician really should have one of these things because it's way cool.
Okay.
But again, it allows you access to your rig from pretty much anywhere you happen to be. I thought that was amazing.
It is, and I think that's just a reflection of what's going on in the industry, because while we're talking about LEDs, there's this whole other side over here that's being developed on the control side. Uh-oh. That's really amazing.
Yeah. Trying to get started.
How about
on
the
control
stuff, Jeremy's stuff from Entech?
Right.
I forget the exact name of the product. Somebody help me out here. But when somebody asked me what it was, I said, well, if you have an issue with your rig and you need to do an intervention, this is the stuff that you do the intervention with, because you can get at every aspect of the rig. You can look at what it's doing. You can get it to do different stuff, and you can do it without interrupting the control console protocol.
Oh, the DataGate MK2?
That's the one.
That
thank
right,
you very much.
Yeah. Right.
But that's amazing control. I mean, and command and control.
And Pathways, their switch, you know, the managed switch, and they've got the power over Ethernet. And it's just, it's those, you know, a lot of people think they can buy a cheap switch at you know, Best Buy, but the thing is that console data is seen as an attack on a system sometimes, and it's going to shut down the system. So it's smart to see engineered switches, you know.
VIA, right?
Yes, right. It's 10 plus 1, and then, I mean, you know, PRG does one, but it's in the rental in the Series 400. They did their own switches, but I think that seeing that a developed switch for this entertainment industry and some things and stuff is a smart way to go. Rob Baxter's little iPhone app that finally finished
it finally
up.
Finally,
you know,
works. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, it was like, it goes, we showed it last year. Okay, it wasn't done, but you know, there was, you know, 36 channels in there.
The pocket console wireless.
Yeah. Wireless.
You're talking about
99 cents, right?
Yeah, or free. I don't know what he's going to do.
99 cents.
99 cents for the software. But of course, that just sits on the phone. You still got to buy the little black box, which is, of course, what I like.
Well, what I love Baxter Control. I love his pocket console. But what got me a little discombobulated was the protocol. He didn't specify what the protocol was. You know, the app I thought would run over ArtNet, since that's pretty much
just does just does DMX.
It's DMX.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, you know, the pocket console is spitting out DMX, so you're talking to the console with your app. So it doesn't matter what the protocol is. What matters is what's coming out of the pocket console.
Well, no, you've got to connect the iPhone to the wireless, and then the wireless connects to his black box thing that you have to use, that you have to purchase in lieu of that.
Yeah, that's 802.11. That's not ArtNet.
Yeah, that's just that black box.
That's straight up 802.11. And you can either talk directly to the console, or you can pile onto the console depending on how you do your ins and outs on that. So you can have it pre-console or post-console.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But again, that's a diagnostic tool. You know, that's something you need in the road box to have with you. And I think it's, again, as a technician that serves the industry, that's important to know about that tool. It's a great tool.
Yeah, tools and solutions are a good one. Yeah.
Well, the one tool that I've actually had for years now is the Swisson XT.
XMT.
Yeah, that one, that little
one skillion or whatever. It is.
It's been around forever, and I love that thing.
Yeah, I use it all the time.
Don't go anywhere without that. Well, except LDI, I don't have it here, but.
It's okay.
Yeah, but you take those switches and nodes and doodads and you can combine them with wireless, and now you've got some really powerful control systems that are easy to set up and quick, and you don't have cables strung everywhere.
Yeah.
I think that's where the industry is going, is towards taking more better advantage of all the tools for control and combining that with the tools for lighting, and now we've got some really, really powerful stuff going
on. I think that one of the, talking about something like that, like I think RDM is finally, people are finally finding ways to implement it.
How many years later?
And understand it.
And understand it and put it out there, and actually along with the Wi-Fi, along with these tools, get it out there, just discover, diagnose, program, all that stuff.
And WDMX summed it up with their button, cables suck.
Well, real quick, going to wireless, you know, I live in D.C. and, you know, there's every single form of government in that, you know, 10 miles square block, 100 square miles. You know, how reliable do you think wireless is?
That's not an issue. It's totally reliable. There's two bands. There's 2.5 gigahertz band, which is what cordless telephones are on. It's what microwave ovens are on, and a couple of other things. Well, and then there's the 5.8 gigahertz band, and those are what are called unlicensed bands. So the police aren't on it. The ambulance isn't on it. The fire department's not on it.
Well,
it's not an issue.
Well, none of those sacred buildings in D.C.
are on
it. It's affected by the whole white space thing.
It's not affected by the white space thing. And it's also, it uses adaptive frequency hopping spread spectrum technology, which solves all those issues.
Well, what we were talking about this in the phone it in session this morning about wireless control. I personally don't trust 100% like wireless DMX does.
I do.
There are people doing major shows on it now. I mean, Eurovision.
It's a pretty mature technology now.
Yeah,
it is.
Well, the thing that we were worried about was Ann Valentino said it best. They were doing some stuff down in 8th and 44th Street. There are 156 Wi-Fi access points singing out signal. You know, what's to say that won't screw yours up?
What's to say it won't screw it up is that there are a couple hundred channels available, and with adaptive frequency hopping spread technology, it lessens the the chances that you're going to have interference. It finds those busy channels and it hops over them. This is technology that's been around since the 1930s. It was Hedy Lamarr had a patent for a frequency hopping technology to avoid detection of control signals for torpedoes to sink German subs. It's been around a long time. It's solid.
Yeah.
It is solid.
Yeah.
So, Lumen Radio. I love Lumen Radio. I don't know. Did you guys get a chance to stop by there?
I've not had a chance to play with it yet.
Tell me what this is. I have no idea.
I forget the gentleman's name, but he was at Wireless DMX. He started his own company, Lumen Radio.
Is that Nicholas Arfison?
I think so. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But it's actually, unfortunately, not available in the U.S. anymore due to a lawsuit, but... We'll skip that whole subject there.
That's the best part. Yeah. Yeah. That's what they want to hear.
Geez, that never happened in this business. That's amazing.
Or whatever.
But TMB distributes it in Europe and England, and they not in the U.S. at the moment.
Yeah.
What is it? I still don't know what
it's
it is.
It's wireless DMX.
Okay, thank you.
So
we have WDMX. We have now these guys who split off, so rivals.
Right.
But I think they're, you know, WDMX has been leading the way in something, so it's interesting to see some competition kind of come into it. There's City Theatricals, which was, I think, kind of fabulous. It's built into this new power supply for the Color Blast, the PDS 750 TRX. But
unfortunately named device.
Yeah.
Amazing device. But
engineers love it. Yeah. Consumers are like, because there's TRS, there's TR. You know. But the one nice thing that I did like about it was it takes all the legacy color kinetics, like Color Blast, and you can plug them in, and it doesn't give you gaps in DMX addressing. But it can also handle them, and you know, so it's a 12-way power supply that's going to feed those out. So it really kind of gives you that, and the Show DMX is built into it for a pretty reasonable cost. It's about the same as the non-Show DMX version. So you're getting that wireless built into it. It's a receiver now, but you can for rental shops, they're going to love it because I think the fact that there are so many different color blasts out there, and I own this one, and I got to mix them up or something. You got that in there, so it's kind of clever. There's a 6-way and a 12-way.
That's only a few months old, and they've already updated the OS on it, the software for it. So it used to be you couldn't individually address the different ports, and one was just a hard one. But now you can change it all around and individually address things and change.
And it has
a
USB
stuff,
for firmware.
It has for firmware. So thank you. That's what I was looking for. Firmware. They've already upgraded the firmware.
They've really thought through it, because I mean they're always great about those little widgets to make your life easier. I think for those guys who need to do those kind of, you know, events and other things with Color Blast and stuff, you know, that's great.
So, you know what I think is the most improved control product? Did anybody actually take a look at the new software version in the Leprechaun LPC?
Yes,
just
I
came
saw
from
that
there.
Thing.
In my mind, that's the most improved product. The LPC was developed to address a demand for a replace for the Express console, right? Mm-hmm. They now have a moving light software protocol in there. They went with a bigger screen. It's a touch screen. And I was over talking to Julie, and they're showing me the stuff, and the assigning's going pretty nicely. And I said, but where are the encoders? It's on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's on the screen.
Wow.
Because Leprechaun's always built a really strong and robust product, I think it's going to be good for the rental market. I think it's going to be really good for the entry level, for the school market. Because the kids will program that before you get the rest of the ring unpacked.
Yeah, the touch screens are getting much better.
Yeah, they are.
But the design of it is awesome. The thing about it is it's a really clear, uncluttered design for the interface. So the way you can move through it, it's really big tab, just boom, here's my beam. You can select your gobies. You can do whatever else you want on. Here's my colors. And the color picker comes right back up. And you just spin it around, do it down. And then on the bottom of the screen, it has a strip where it just says, these are all the attributes. So you can see them all at the same time. And if you want to just go down there and punch on that, if you got the color picker up there, but I want to change my gobo, you pop it down there and bump and play with that while you're still got it. So it's really well done.
That's great.
Yeah, and I'm impressed.
I love the fact that it's priced in line with that Etcetera lighting product, that Element, ETC.
Yeah, absolutely.
The ETC Element. And, you know, when I saw it, it was pretty comparable, not in operating system, but, you know, ease of use and the abilities behind it.
Again, I think there's going to be a good market for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And Lightrite 5 and the integration of Vectorworks is getting better, and now Lightright Touch, which is going to be the iPad version stuff that's coming with West Side Systems. Sarah Cornwall is doing a partnership with John McKernan. So it's apparently not full Lightright, but it's better than right now. You have to take your paperwork and make a PDF, and you can read it on like iAnnotate or something like that. Yeah. But I think we're going to see a lot more iPad apps. There'll be good remotes, good other tools and things and stuff. So I think it's going to be a good, useful tool for this industry and stuff in there.
So is this Lightright Light?
No.
Light version of Lightright?
Well, no, what it is.
Well,
yes and no. We were talking about it again in the phone it in session. It's not a direct, you still have to buy Lightright 5. It's a companion app.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
Like, it is a light version, but you can only do slight editing right now. It does not connect back to Lightright 5, does not do focus notes right now. But the software isn't released. We're still another 3 months out, I think he said. I saw a demo. It's pretty awesome. They don't know pricing yet either or the definite availability, but this has been asked for a huge amount over the industry, and it's so awesome to see them finally take
advantage of it. John McKernan's answer was, how much would you pay for it? You know, and for John, he's designing show, he's doing Lightright, he's got all these other things to do. So I think it was good that he partnered there at Cornwall, who does Virtual Light Lab, and he's got some really great iPhone apps. Mm-hmm. I think it's really good partnership of the two to bring that together.
Absolutely.
Something, so.
Yeah. Great. Good choices, I think. Yeah.
What else was there? Go ahead.
I've been hogging the mic. It's not else. I mean, I have lots to say, but I don't want to hog the mic.
Moving light-wise, I thought Clay Packy's got some interesting things. That 700 profile with shutters, its mm-hmm. first 700 with shutters, looked really nice and really fast. The Sharpie's convention, too, with a 190-watt lamp in there. So I'm waiting to hear a price on that. I did not hear a price on that one. So, but I think they're really kind of doing some interesting things. And back to LEDs for a brief moment. I thought the Martin Mac 101 was
Martin Mac 101, yeah. I think that's
it was light. It was just fast.
Oh, it weighs nothing. It's wonderful. I think it's going to be a great product.
You know, every designer I talked to, that was the top of their list. Yeah. They were like, oh, that you got to go see. You got to go see. You know,
and what is it? Is it the 301 or the 401 that's actually got two sides on it?
Right. The 401.
Oh, 401. That's a very cool idea.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the. I think the back is an option.
Yeah, the back's an option, and it does soft whitewash. The other side is the color.
So I missed this. The Martin 101 was the small one, that's 8 pounds or anything.
Yeah,
it's a little tiny guy.
How does that 700 or a 450 or something? It's got some punch to it, though.
How does that compare to
the 101? Still LEDs. Is it the LEDs from that one?
Yeah,
101.
It's,
yeah.
Similar. It's similar. Similar. Talking about the same thing now. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Snap-on accessories. It's like a 14-degree beam spread standard.
Okay.
And they'll have some Snap-on accessories they're planning. They had a top hat that I saw. You wouldn't see the LEDs and things, but whips around quick. And the thing is, they come in like a little 8-pack road case, you know, some flight case. You throw them up, you're at single circuit, just pass through power cons. It's like, you know, thinking ahead, I think, of how people use them and some of things.
Yeah.
Just kind of clever stuff.
I want to scroll it back a little bit to Clay Packy, because I wanted to check out the demo of the 700 and the Sharpie. And those are some powerful lights. Like, you think about light, and you put haze in the air, so you can kind of get the physical aspect of the beams. But those are they say they're punchy beams, and they mean it. Like, as those beams moved through the air, it really was like a physical effect as they kind of moved over you. Like, it really was intense.
And
so.
Some of the gobo effects they were doing on top of each other.
Oh, the fireworks gobo effects.
Yeah.
They scrolled through those.
They had
and
some macros that they built into the fixture or something. They triggered these things or something.
It was really
clever.
They did zoom, focus, and gobo switching. I don't think it was all in the same fixture. I had three different fixtures doing it, but it did. It had this really great fireworks effect, and you could watch as they stepped up the speed on it, and it was really great. It was nice.
There were a lot of really good moving light fixtures out there. I mean, we shouldn't neglect that side. We talk a lot about LEDs, but there are a lot of new moving lights out there. The IntelliSpot,
XT1, right? The IntelliSpot.
IntelliSpot
and the XT1.
The Barco high-end IntelliSpot and the XT1.
T1.
What else was there?
Well, they had separate, like, two.
Robi has a whole slew of new moving light products. They're all really good, bright, punchy. They're still getting brighter. They're getting smaller. They're getting more affordable. Philips and
Robi's an up and comer. I mean, we got to watch them because it's fun to watch a good company move forward.
I was
kind of
surprised nobody else followed them on the plasma lamp.
Yes.
I'm going to see the plasma lamp go into other pictures.
Yes.
I think a Follow Spot guy is the next one to maybe try and do that. You know, Lysine or something like that. possibly. I think that the plasma, I'll see it in more fixtures, but I think it's great to see it in the with the MMX, and then they've got the and then Sea Changer with it in their
C-changer, right.
Unit and stuff. So.
Yeah, and Philips has a new plasma lamp that last year they introduced the Platinum 5R. And that's not a plasma lamp. It's a ceramic discharge lamp. Right. But it's very efficient. But they also have a new 15R, Platinum 15R. So that's just another example of how they're improving efficiency, putting them in smaller fixtures that are really, really bright.
Mm-hmm. Anybody see the new Lyseon 1275?
Yes.
I thought that was pretty spectacular. That's one I think Ken Billington asked them to develop. And they turned it on for me, and I was looking at the beam on the wall, and I looked at the color boom, and there was no color in there, and I said, where's the color correction? Because this is a tungsten color. It comes that way out of the light bulb. And I don't know the light source, but it's a beautiful tungsten color, and with a nice punch out of a mid-sized spotlight. So I think that's another one that they can address, because right. skin tones are going to be beautiful under that thing.
Hmm. Was this the 1275 or the 1250?
Maybe it was a 1250.
The 1250 is the new one.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, this is the 1250. Yeah.
I was trying to mark it up.
Well, I just wanted to make sure we were talking about the same thing.
What was the lamp in that? Is that the HMI lamp?
Yeah. It's a 1200-watt Philips FastFit 80-volt.
That's it.
To it down, and there's a transformer in the unit itself.
Right.
So
what they said, what's interesting about that is it kind of fills a gap for them between the tungsten and the HMI. There was always this kind of big gap in there.
Yeah. Right.
And it sounds very affordable. I don't have a price on things.
Do we want the price? They're 90% sure on the price at $4,400.
See what I'm saying?
Which is really cheap. Yeah.
It's good. You know, so I think there's a great niche there that they're kind of finding and stuff in that range.
They also, the thing they do on that, which was interesting to me, is they have a different kind of reflector in there.
Yes.
I forget exactly I'm looking over my notes here trying to make sure I did it, but yeah, I don't have exactly what they've done, but the reflector is it's a new technology on the reflector for them, so it doesn't discolor as much and it doesn't change the color of the
light. Right. And then Osram Sylvania, did you see the new HP lamps? They have an HP, the GLG and the GLH,
yeah.
and seven things, mm-hmm. and seven things.
Yeah, they just keep cranking them out.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
Well, great. Well, you know, I think to kind of switch tracks a little bit, I don't think any discussion about LDI 2010 would be complete without mention of automation, because mm-hmm. that is one of the frontiers that is really exciting in our industry right now. I think automation is the moving light of the 80s. It's going to change the industry the way moving lights changed the industry 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. You saw Fisher Technology Services Inc. out there, or FTSI out there. Mm-hmm. There's CyberHoist. There's and then there's all these control platforms like Mediator, and there was a new one back there, Integrated in Systems Engineering, I think it's called. Which it's the same idea. It's taking all these disparate control systems and putting them together on one control platform. So now you have the ability to network all of these different devices that move, that pyrofex, or video control, all these things in a centralized control system. So now you can do some really incredibly interesting stuff. And when you start motorizing and controlling the cast software Black Tracks, two different products.
You're right, Black Tracks.
But now you've got, you're mixing moving systems with virtualizing them and pre-programming and automating them and putting that all together on the network. And now you've got some really incredibly powerful tools for producing shows.
Yeah. They've got the, I can't remember the name of it offhand, they introduced it last year. They also have their software program, their audio software program tied into that as well. So you can zone out your audio, tie that into tracking the Black Tracks, and you can have the audio, as much as the lights follow the infrared signal, you can also have your audio different zones go out, so you can like kind of follow it around as well. And that's
what's audio?
there it is.
Gave it up for my health.
Sorry.
No, I agree. I think it's just, what about media servers? Would you guys see anything new and interesting in media servers?
Interactive Technologies. Did you look at that thing?
I did not.
It's the size of a pack. It's the size of a flip camera. The only thing missing on it is the little Kensington lock, because otherwise someone would put it in their pocket. Yeah. Very, very cool.
You know, cool Lexus player. They had some new stuff in there and things. I didn't get a chance to play with Hippo and see much of their stuff and things. But
the cool thing I saw was Light Converse.
Mm-hmm.
The lighting design software.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They are able to now, with their 3D platform, they can take, they can model in 3D projection and program in or build in warping and edge blending. So now you can do that before the signal is sent to the projector. And you don't have to have those tools on the projector. And that's a very affordable platform. It's much, I think it would probably be much less expensive than putting those features into the projector itself. So I think they've got a very clever solution there.
Okay.
One thing I have to bring up, I saw it the first day and then totally lost track of it because there's a lot to look at here. Going back to automation was RC4 Wireless. They're doing, they came up with this platform. It's hard to describe without the video on it, but
it's an automated wagon.
It's an automated wagon that can maintain perspective and do complete circles.
Exactly.
So you can stay perpendicular to the stage,
right,
to the end of the stage, and just do a circle all the way around it because they've got like special 30-degree roller treads on it, so you can just move it sideways, back and forth, and then complete circles and maintain its positioning within the space.
Yeah, and that's huge. That's huge. That's going to be huge. They're going to find a lot of applications for that in projection and moving lights and moving. We're going to start moving lights. And if you saw the demo over at the Synchrolight stand, there's something called Parasol, mm-hmm, which is a moving light track for moving lights. So you put it mounted on a truss, and now all the moving lights are moving in coordination with each other while they're moving in space. So
it's not enough to have a light move in space, but now we have to have the actual device move now.
Wrap your head around that.
Yes. Oh, we'll take it one more degree there.
Lighting and scenery.
But I think a lot of those, the projector guys, the control, I think it's going to be interesting to see where, you know, warping and blending, just the different control sides of things and stuff. It's kind of fascinating to see. You know, some of these kind of coming from maybe other industries and stuff that come into it, you know, science and stuff, but of just how you can manipulate a beam and how you can work with it and stuff. Like, it's kind of fascinating and stuff.
It's very fascinating.
Yeah.
It really is.
I think that, yeah. And I think the whole, it's going to be visual design. I still think there's that merge is going to happen more and more in some things and stuff. So.
Hey, speaking of automation, yes, that guy right there.
I was waiting for Michael to bring
this up. Well, I didn't want to too far.
I'm pointing to the
PRG Commander.
PRG Commander. And it is interfaced with the new
V476
controller. It's moving, and I think those are actually Fisher FTSI. I could be wrong. But
no, those are all Sina Technologies.
Sina Technologies. They're moving video panels. And if you watch the integration between the media server and the commander,
mm-hmm,
they move the panels in such a way that the video is stationary, but the panels are moving.
Mm-hmm.
It's mind-blowing.
Yeah. I love that 2 degrees. I was talking to Mike about this earlier in the show. I love the 2 degrees. The video can stay the same, but the panels can go through it.
Exactly.
And they can even do the shadows, as if you're front projecting on it, and the shadows will move as a platform. And on an LED, like, you don't think about it. You're like, oh, yeah, there's a shadow. Well, no, the light's coming from a completely different source, so something's processing all of that.
Right. Yeah, the M-Box is doing the media processing for it. And they have, like, now they have 12 layers, and you can do two things per layer, actually, so it gives you, you know, essentially 24. But yeah, you can really kind of manipulate it.
It's deceptively simple. You look at it, and it makes sense. Of course it can do that. And then you take a step back and think about everything that went into that, and it's astounding.
It really is. And that's the future of the industry right there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, great. Anything else that's worth mentioning here at LDI?
There's a lot.
There is a lot.
We could be here for days. Yeah. We could do this for 3 days.
I think the recap is going to go on and on for, yeah, online. All right. And things.
Well, for about a year.
Yeah.
Until next LDI.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. We'll get it all done by next Orlando.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me here on the podcast. Here in the PRG booth, or I'm sorry, the PRG meeting room. I completely forgot to mention that at the beginning of the show.
Thanks, PRG.
Thanks,
yeah,
PRG.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you, PRG. Yes, thank you for inviting us.
Yes, thanks for having us.
No, it was a pleasure. We'll have to do this again sometime soon, huh?
Cool. All right.
I'm liking it. In.
Thanks, guys.
Well, there it is. Four great minds, plus me, talking about some of the latest and greatest products that we saw at LDI 2010. I had a blast talking to these guys, and like Richard said, we could have been there all day long and 3 days more talking about just LEDs. LEDs were not the only thing at LDI. You know, I keep joking around, LEDI, LEDI. But there were so many other products, rigging, control, just everything and anything you can think about in the industry was at LDI. And it was so well represented. I'm still mad at myself for not being able to get out to see all these different things at the show. I guess I didn't time manage very well, but 2.5 days seems like a heck of a long time to be able to see 300 booths. Not necessarily. You really got to plan out. And I thought I had a great plan, but, you know, still, I got to see a lot of great things. Those guys got to see a lot of great things, and I'm sure you guys got to see a lot of great things if you were at the show. I'm sorry if you couldn't make it, but maybe next year, right? Anyways, thanks for joining me here on the 12th episode of the Ice Quinn Podcast. One last time, I'd like to thank the guys joining me on the podcast, you know, Michael Eddy, Richard Cadena, David Schraffenberger, and Jacob Coakley. A huge thank you to PRG for allowing us to record this in their meeting room. It was a blast, guys. Thanks so much, and see you next time. I'm going to end this podcast with something very, very special. If you're at the Four Wall Party, the industry party, if you will, at LDI, you may have seen these guys. They're called the Swinging Johnsons Band. It's a collection of industry professionals that just love to rock out, and man, did they rock out at the Four Wall Party. You can find them online at the Swingin' Johnson's Band. Their website is swinginjohnsonsband.com. That's SWINGINJONSONSBAN.com. I'll have a link on the site. It'll be easier. So, I'm going to leave it with their song from their first album, or the last album, I can't remember which, called Plaything. She was the king.